Welcome to TFP, the Theater Folk Podcast, the place to be for drama teachers, drama students, and theater educators everywhere. I'm Lindsay Price, resident playwright for Theater Folk. Hello. I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. This is episode 165. 165. You can find any links to this episode in the show notes, which are at theaterfolk.com/episode165. All right, my friends, today we're going to talk about favorite buzzword, but then when I formed the word buzzword in my head, I'm like, well, it's not my buzzword, because I think buzzword and I think negative marketing connotation, and that's not what I mean at all, because like buzzwords are like slick, and you know, I think we can share with one another that I'm not a slick person, unless there is an oil spill, in which case I would be the one who would slick into it, of course, right? My world is filled with all that kind of slick, but I'm talking about a word that I like to hang my hat on, that I like to use, that I, when I think of this word, the images that come to my mind just are, give me all the warm feels. I think it's wonderful. And I really think it's important to use in an educational realm, an educational theater realm. And that word is community. I love the title of this particular podcast. Theater is community. And I love thinking of a production, of a drama club, of a drama class as a community. And our guest today, Michael Worley, also loves the word community. And when he creates work with students, that's his keyword, or hat hanging word, or his word of the day. You know, things, world brain goes in weird places. Does Sesame Street still do a word of the day, or was it a letter of the day, or maybe I'm just too old to remember the structure of Sesame Street. Let's go with that one. Too old. Anyway, so podcast and community. Let's get to it. All right, I am talking to Michael Worley. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Lindsay.
How's it going?
All is well.
Excellent. Tell everybody where in the world you are.
Portland, Oregon.
I love Portland, Oregon. Oregon and Orlegan.
Or again.
Or when the tongue just... Oh, don't you love it when the tongue gets tripped up? My favorite is I'm a real pro at taking two words and then in my head and then smashing them together to make something.
Oh, lovely. I do the same thing.
Not good.
And they come out.
Awesome. Okay. So now that we've established all the things that we do wrong with our pronunciations, let's start over again. Okay. So Michael, talk about, so you are a, you have a lot of hats.
I do indeed. My theater company is 20 years old, and what we specialize in is bringing programs to organizations and schools and community centers, and that's what we do. There are a couple of schools that I've been personally working at for a long time, but I'm very fortunate in my career now that I, as a teacher, get to pick and choose the places that I want to work at, and then just hire teachers for all the other things that New Moon Productions does.
Yeah. And we know you because you have written a lovely play. We open tomorrow night. We have a full-length version and a one-act version, which we'll talk about in a bit. But so you work a lot with students. And how did this become about? Like, when you started in your career as a theater person, what did you think you were going to turn out to be?
Oh, what a lovely question. Well, like most theater people coming out of college, I thought I was going to be an actor and primarily do stage Shakespeare. And I realized fairly quickly that I just didn't like what I had to do to make it as an actor, particularly in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, which is extremely competitive. And plus, I by that time was much more interested in directing and producing and writing. So I formed a theater company, and the idea was that I would get the chance to do some of my plays. I would get a chance to do funky and alternative theater. And strangely enough, that didn't go anywhere either. So, while during all this time to make a living, I was doing children's theater, both as an actor and as a teacher. And that's where I started to fall in love with teaching. So we completely retooled the theater company and made it a children's theater company. And while we were in Texas, we did full seasons. So we would do four shows a year, all youth casts. Had classes going all year round, did lots of outreach. It was wonderful and amazing and brilliant. And that's where I really got the bug of wearing all the different hats. I enjoyed the administration, I enjoyed producing, I enjoyed grant writing.
You must
And
be
when
the
I'm,
only one.
well, and I also enjoyed the benefits of all of that, of getting to do plays that I wanted to do, and that got me on the path of playwriting. And then when I moved to Oregon, I wanted to simplify, not wear as many hats. So that's where I honed it down and decided, all right, I'm not going to have a theater space any longer. That's just too much work, and I'm just going to concentrate on bringing programs to organizations. And then slowly, after about 6 years of living here, I was able then to finally just pick and choose exactly the projects I personally wanted to work on, and then just administrate everything else. And that's where I'm at now, and I'm loving it. I'm very blessed to make a living in the biz this way.
So, what is it about the teaching aspect that caught you?
I think it was simply the joy of seeing the kids get the realization to really get it, that theater really is about collaboration and listening to your partner. I enjoy directing, so that was another avenue for it. But for me, it was the realization once a child is able to get to the point, of just either getting their role, understanding what they're doing. Pretty much any realization that they come across during the rehearsal period gave me as big a thrill as I had ever had as an actor.
Go.
And also experiencing, and I can only, of course, speak to the Dallas-Fort Worth area, witnessing teaching methods that I'll just say were not effective. We'll just leave it at that. And how passionate I am about, because we have such a small audience out there that we don't ever want to turn kids off to theater. And some teaching methods tend to do that. And that's another thing I'm very passionate about, is I want them to walk away with loving the medium, whether they decide to pursue it or not, at least enjoying the fact that theater is wonderful and cool and brilliant, and that they can participate in any way, shape, or form as an audience member or as an actor or any of the above.
Well, there's so many things that they can learn, you know? Like just as you say, you know, just a simple realization. There's no greater exclamation than a young person realizing that they get something, or that they have a fan, like have a community, or that they
Yes.
there it just is it, I totally agree with you that there's no greater joy, I think, is that whether it's we're seeing a student do that, or having a student interact with one of my plays. I'm not, and it's a great realization for me to go, you know, I don't need the big production. I don't need Broadway. I need this wonderful exploration, and seeing a student realize something for the first time is pretty awesome.
Very well said. And I'd love to speak to the community aspect of it too, because that's as equally important to me. And even more so now, but it definitely was in Texas. But the community building, to back up a little bit, My theater company was in the south of Dallas, an area back then, 20 years ago, that really had no presence. Certainly had no theater presence, and it definitely did not have a youth theater program of any way, shape, or form. And I watched families come together from all economic levels, all ethnic, and come together for a communal cause and forge new friendships, understand that all points of view are welcomed and that we can accept them all and understand them all. And well, I'll just say again, that's the thrill I got from bringing theater through my teaching. And it's even stronger now because a lot of the schools we serve are Title I schools and very, very high poverty families. And a lot of the schools simply would not be able to afford arts other than our theater company coming on in. And we supplement a lot of what we do with grant money. So we can offer very low cost, or in some cases, no cost theater programs for schools. And the turnaround in behavior in the schools, acceptance of other cultures and understanding, and of course, Lindsay, you know all of this. It just makes a huge difference for that community and that school, having a theater program of some form in the school.
You know, it's so funny. I think it's the thing that we, you know, when we're involved with theater, it's sometimes the thing we don't think about consciously, that community thing. You know, particularly when we get out into the world, when we're all alone, you know, because like we're
Oh,
trying to make a
yes.
living as an actor alone. We're trying to make a living as a playwright alone. And that when you get right back down to it, when we all, I think that all of us who circle back around into education is that the ability to give somebody a home and the ability to provide tools to have a student be a part of a community and then go out and build their own community. It's
Yes.
astonishing.
Yes. Yes. And yes.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. So what are some of the things that when you're working with students and when you are going into some of those schools which might not be able to avoid the arts, avoid the
Oh my
arts.
God, not the arts.
Not the
Don't
arts.
put me.
Who aren't able to provide arts programs. So you're working with students who don't have a lot of exposure, I'm guessing, to the arts.
No, that's very true, particularly theater. Or if they've been exposed to theater, it's been a teacher that has begrudgingly taken on doing, well, here they teach the Oregon Trail and also the history of Portland. So there are some dreadful plays that force kids to do with
What do you
minimal
mean?
rehearsal, and their
You mean
experience generally is fairly
there isn't great theater in exploring the Oregon Trail?
I worked with a group of kids that wrote their own play about the Oregon Trail,
And
and
so they should.
it was really charming. It was lovely.
Okay.
But when I come into a school, the first thing is for me is to show them my passion about this art form, and I tell them a little bit about myself and that here I am at 52, and I'm still as passionate, still happy, still as excited and thrilled about every new theater project that I get. And from there, I also put down my guidelines for what I'm intending to bring to the class. A lot of what we do are production classes, so I'll go down, this is my expectations of how rehearsals are going to run, when lines are going to be learned, et cetera, et cetera. And then I tell them, here's what I'm going to bring to the table. You guys are going to have costumes and props, and I'm going to do my best to encourage you guys and your creativity and to solicit your opinions on things. So right from the bat that they know they are not just passive in this, that they are participants, full participants in the end product. And that the end product is what all of us are working towards. And the ancillary benefits of that are that we have this great experience, we are making friendships, we get to express ourselves. And so basically, I'm going over all of that with the students. And then I'm very firm about enforcing an environment that will be conducive to that.
Hey, you know what?
So,
I just wanted to, and I wanted to reiterate one thing that you just said, which I think is really great, in that you're explaining to them what they have to bring to the table, but you're also telling them what you are going to bring to the table.
Yes.
When you're talking about a community, like, it's just not you guys are going to do all the work. I'm going to do work too. And does that help? I've just never heard it expressed in that way. And I think it's really great that it's we're all going to work together.
Absolutely. And I want them to know what my participation is going to be. I don't want them to simply think that, well, it's Bossy Michael telling us what to do. I am as invested in this process in the outcome of the process and the experience itself as they are. I want to have a good time. I want to enjoy this. I want you to walk away as a student, as a cast member, thinking that theater is a wonderful, cool, a magical process. I would like you to walk away thinking that you did the best job you could possibly do and that you contributed to the whole, and that people are walking away not just saying that was a good kid's play. Mm. They're walking away saying that was a good play, period. Let's take the word kid out of it. They just enjoyed it because it was a good story and these cast members rose to the occasion. So I'm just showing them my passion, and I'm also showing them I am equally committed.
And you're also laying down some, or making sure that there is some rules enforced.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I make them sign a contract. I call it a heart contract, and I basically go over it with them. On the contract, it states what the goals are. Typically, the goals are that we have fun, that we are working towards a wonderful play, and that everybody in the play is having a good experience. And then I put down what my guidelines of the rules, and the rules are all positive. So there's not a single don't or don't do this on the rule list. Mm. It's typical stuff like respect each other, respect the space, learn your lines on time. If it's elementary kids, keep your hands and feet to yourself, stuff like that. And then I actually go over the consequences as well, because again, when I am in the school, they have to understand that this is also a privilege to be a part of this, and that as part of that privilege, you get to experience the magic, but you have to contribute to the whole. So I outline what the consequences are if the rules are broken, and then they all sign it as if it is a contract. And typically I post that around at least for the first week or two, just in case we have a minor violation. And I say that facetiously, but I use the term reminder. Oh, there's rule number one. You know, what were you thinking about that? Oh, yeah, I guess I was going to mess around. Great, let's move on. So they know exactly through signing the contract that I'm serious about my contribution and I'm serious about what they're going to bring to the table.
Yeah, I like your use of reminder as opposed to violation, you know.
Yes. You know,
it's a theater. It is, in the end, I mean, the whole point of this is that we establish that, yes, this is supposed to be fun, but that there is a structure, and about how much safer it all feels when there is a structure in place.
Absolutely. And again, that was a bad joke. Violation is never a word that I ever
Of course not,
used.
Of course not.
And again, the term reminder is important to me because I can continue to reference what the goals are. So if I have to give a reminder, it is because what they were doing was not helping us towards our goals of having fun, having a wonderful play, and everybody in it feeling good about their participation. And I also reference two sports because they almost invariably are playing some sort of sport, and they understand in a sport that does take discipline and it does take commitment. There's no way you learn how to dribble a basketball unless you practice dribbling a basketball. So I like to use that reference a lot too, because certainly in a school situation, that is something they can definitely understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also a big one on always catching anything positive that I can immediately point out during the classroom. And if it takes a private little thing of saying, wow, you did fantastic. But generally, I like to have, public declarations of when I see things going wonderful, or even just a little thing. Thank you for holding the door open. Thanks for remembering your script. Little things like that I can point out. And I sometimes I'm as anal to actually keep a list so I can make sure I have given compliments to everybody in the class.
Yeah. No, well, people, they're not stupid, and they notice everything and they remember everything.
Yes. Boy,
So,
and that is the biggest lesson I've had over the years of doing it. Yes, they remember everything. Something that I may have said off the cuff, and that was a
yes.
year ago, and it's like, oh, yeah, I did say that, didn't I?
It's something that I have to constantly, and I'm not real good at, I'm not very good at remembering this. It comes back time and time again where someone will come up and said, "You said this to me a year ago," and it's kept me going for a whole year. And I'm like, "Holy cow. I
Wow.
said some I said a tiny little thing that I could never possibly remember." And that student has kept that one sentence. And it's like it goes the other way too, like if you're flippantly, if you think you're being flippant and a joke, giving a joke, and that they take that to heart just as much as the good things.
Oh yeah. In fact, I kind of like it when they call me on that too, if I have done a joke that somehow it was misinterpreted, and they said, "But you said this." I'm like, "Yep, you're right. That was, I'll either apologize or own up to it, or at least share with them why. Well, here was my thought process there, and obviously I didn't bring that across."
Well, if you
So I'm.
want, it's all about if you want their trust and you want them, you want if you want them to come to the table and bring everything to the table, it's the same thing. You have to do the same.
Absolutely.
What are some exercises if we're talking about building this community and building ensemble? What kind of work do you do throughout? Is it in warm-ups? Do you do a lot of gameplay before rehearsal?
Not I do gameplay generally the first couple of classes, and a lot of the stuff that we do, we're very limited on time, so
Right.
Rehearsals are anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour, and if I get an hour 15, I'm jumping for joy. But generally, it's between like 30 to 60 minutes. So
So do you
warm
like
up.
yeah, do you so do you like have to have like a pretty rigorous is not quite the right word, disciplined, I guess. Do you like get into a discipline and a routine so that they respect the time as much as you do?
Absolutely. I mean, they know from the minute they walk through the door, we get in our circle, we do our warm-ups, the first week or two, we probably will play a focus game like popcorn or whoosh, or, and again, you probably have different names for the
I
games
was just about
too,
to
or
say,
puzzle.
I don't know either of the, I don't know either of, I probably do, just not by those names.
Well, popcorn is it's also called pass the clap. It's where you're
Oh,
in a
yeah.
circle and you look at your partner and you're both clapping at the same time, and then you send it around the curtain circle. Okay, so and then I've got three or four of those games like pass the clap, where when they know it well enough, then you can play all three at the same time, or you can start with popcorn and then go to zip zap zup, or go to whoosh, and then again, it's just a great tool for getting them focused. But generally, with my classes, time is a little bit of an issue, but it's definitely in at least warm-ups, a very good, firm physical and vocal warm-up, and then a focus game, definitely in the first couple of weeks, and then towards the end through the rehearsal process, when they're really more solid with lines, then we can again kind of bring the focus games back into the fold. But then again, I'm also extremely organic in the classroom, and when it's one of those days where there ain't nothing going right, I'm perfectly fine to stop and play a game, because continuing to pound away at something that is just not going to happen that day is just not conducive for anybody to be happy. So I'm okay with stopping what we're doing and taking a minute, playing a game, focusing, sitting down, even if it's necessary, having them sit down during the rehearsal and take some time to learn lines. Again, I just base it off of where they're at. Where are they at today? I got what I would like to do, but sometimes that's not going to happen, and I need to honor that as, again, part of my commitment
Yeah. Yep, sometimes they are not going to do what you would like to do.
Exactly.
And it's important to be flexible. And well, because that'll help in the next day, even if it doesn't get done today.
Yes.
By exactly as you said, by honoring where they are, they're going to see that and you'll be able to move forward on another day.
I've got a little story about that. Can I share it real quick?
Yes, please.
It's the caterpillar story. So this is, 15 years ago. And I'm in the classroom, and this is fifth graders, and we just got finished with warm-ups, and we're starting to go up onto the stage, and this little fuzzy caterpillar just starts walking, and one of the kids notices this fuzzy caterpillar. And for whatever reason, I had it in my head, no, you know, we needed, okay, there's this caterpillar, but let's get up on stage. And every 2 seconds during the rehearsal, they were like, oh, well, where's the caterpillar? Is the caterpillar still down there? Oh, can we go look at the caterpillar? And unfortunately, I was all like, okay, guys, no, let's stop thinking about the caterpillar and let's rehearse. And obviously, I completely wasted my time because they were much more interested in the caterpillar than anything that I had to offer. And I realized that, unfortunately, after the 45 minutes that I was with them. And from that moment on, if a caterpillar appears, we're going to take 5 minutes and deal with the caterpillar and enjoy the caterpillar and maybe bring the caterpillar outside or just at least have an acknowledgement that caterpillar does exist and I can put aside what I need to do. So anytime I'm dealing with a fire drill or somebody's got crazy hair or something silly happens, we acknowledge it and we enjoy it and then we move on, as opposed to that horrible rehearsal where I did not want to acknowledge the caterpillar. So,
well, it was a fuzzy one. Fuzzy. You really couldn't win.
The funny thing was, is that that class then told the next class about the caterpillar. So they all came in.
Where's the caterpillar? Where's the caterpillar?
Where's he? I don't know.
Oh, it's gone. Don't know where it went.
So that's my story.
It's exactly, you know, the fuzzy caterpillar is so many things. It could be that fire alarm. It could be something much more serious, you know, where something happened out of class and everyone's just, their minds are elsewhere.
Yeah.
So
I've had that experience too, where I've had literally an entire class for 30 minutes crying because of a big to do fight prior to my coming to me. So that was our rehearsal.
And sometimes it needs to be.
Yep.
When you were working on We Open Tomorrow Night, did you work from a school from the beginning?
I was working with a school doing a celebration of their fifth and sixth graders moving on, and they wanted to do a talent show, but they didn't want it to be a standard talent show because they had all these kids who just wanted to do a play. And so they were trying to, and it was to accommodate all the classes. So there were basically four classes worth of students. And we talked a little bit about it, and I chatted with the teachers, and they wanted memories of their time in the school, maybe slightly exaggerated, but they wanted memories of their time in the school. And then a lot of the characters that are in the play were sort of based on some of the students. Like there was a British girl and she tended to use British slang. And there were a couple of boys, I remember, who just had all these great ideas of what they wanted to do in the talent show. And so while I was trying to cull all this information down, it just kind of struck me that, well, why not let the play itself be the talent show?
Yeah, it's a very unique piece in that it has the theatrical shell, and it's very specific to a journey, and yet that there are also these opportunities for students to do their own thing. And it comes up a lot. Like we get calls all the time, you know, where so and so is like, well, your play was such and such a play was so inspiring, and they want to add and they want to do this. And it's like, well, you can't really that's not there. And how awesome to have a play where you can go, yes, here you go. You want to add? There's your slot for your own thing. And it's really interesting that you talk about, listening to the students. Again, it's all about listening to the students and sort of getting there, having them come to the table, and then you're going to sort of meet them halfway to sort of make this process.
I love doing that because their creativity has no bounds.
Yeah.
I mean, for those of us like you who have been in the business a while, I mean, sometimes that producer brain wins out over playwright brain, right? Especially if I know I'm going to produce this work. But the kids come in there with the sky's the limit. Why don't we put in this? Why don't we put in that? That's where all the nuggets and jewels came from any time I've created a play with the students, and somewhat from that situation too. It was just mainly pulling the nuggets as far as personalities and characters from the kids, as opposed to so much of the structure. But in other things I have done with students, the jewels have always come because there is no boundaries with them. Anything is possible on stage to do and to tell. Well, and I love that. I love, love, love them coming to the table with a clean slate like that.
Well, it also means that they felt that they could say anything, because they don't always feel that. They learn quickly when they're going to be shot down. So,
right.
You know,
and I'm very careful with that too. When I've got a classroom full of kids, it's another one of those things we're setting down boundaries. So the first thing I say to them is we're not going to say the word no. So whatever you offer, even if it's to have the Eiffel Tower on stage with elephants, we're not going to say no to that. We're just going to simply accept that everybody is sharing their ideas, and then we'll go from there. And that definitely opens the door. And then I also actively solicit the kids who are not as comfortable with sharing in front of their peers too, just so they have a moment or a possibility of sharing. Or if they're not comfortable with that they can write it down and give it to me.
That's a good idea, actually. That's a great idea. It's really important to make sure that, because those are the students who sometimes it's not that they don't have the ideas. They have the ideas. They just are, it's the scenario that might not be, or the situation which might not be comfortable for them.
And that was totally me when I was in school. Even in high school, when the theater bug had already bit me, I still had those moments of, you know, raising my hand and giving my opinion in front of my peers was still very challenging for me. And there are even times today where that creeps up. Not as much, thank goodness, but certainly when I was in school, it was that was a tough one. So I know exactly what it feels like.
Oh yeah, and because you never forget what it's like to be laughed at.
No.
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 Never, never.
Never.
How long did you work on the show with the students?
That was like a 3-month process. Because I remember, I started before the holiday break, and that's where I talked to the classes, kind of felt them out as far as what they wanted to do. And then they kind of formed a committee of kids that wanted to give their ideas as far as the show itself, wrote all that down, and did the writing process over the holidays. And then I think we started the rehearsals towards the end of January. That sounds right. Yeah, so we rehearsed for about 8 weeks, which sounds like a long time, but it was, you know, in these little one-hour chunks, 3 times a week. So it was actually kind of a long process. And while we were doing it, we were changing and fixing things, and invariably more acts wanted to be added. And there was just a lot of adjustment as we were going along.
Do you have so we're going to put a link to We Open Tomorrow Night in the show notes. Do you have, as we close up here, do you have a favorite part of the play?
Oh, it,
Or which is your favorite part? Of course, you have a favorite part.
As a Doctor Who fan, I kind of like,
Yes.
you know, of course, I didn't want to use the actual Doctor Who in the play, but I mean, that's clearly what it is. And I just like the silly references. And I love wordplay, so I loved being able to put in all the British slang into it. And my next favorite character is Ian, the one who with the big ideas. I love that because that was me when I felt comfortable with my friends as a child and just coming up with crazy wild ideas and being enthusiastic. So
Love
that's,
it.
but I love them all.
Love it. As a also a I spent many a day watching Doctor Who as a teenager, so you know, whenever there's a spanner in the works, I'm right there.
Excellent.
Awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time out and having a great conversation with me. And as always, you know, we're here for the students, and I think that anything that we can do to make their time on stage and off stage memorable and enjoyable is something that we can do, right?
Absolutely. Well said, Lindsay.
Awesome. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Michael. Before we go, let's do some Theater Folk news. So, as we mentioned, Michael has a play in the Theater Folk catalog. We open tomorrow night. Question mark, exclamation point. And we have a full-length version and a one-act version. And it's an amazing opportunity for students because it's an open script in the sense that there is a story shell of a scripted talent show with really amazing characters, but the individual acts of this talent show are completely up to you. So you have singers, sing away. You have dancers, great. You have pogo stick experts, you know, fill the slots. We so often get emails from productions where teachers are like, well, the students have been so inspired and they've written their own monologue or they've written their own scene. You know, can we just go ahead and add it in? And the answer is no, you can't. You can't just insert something like that into an existing script, even if you've been inspired. And so we're really happy to have a script like we open tomorrow night, question mark, exclamation point, where we're telling you, put in your own material. There is a place for that. And so go to theaterfolk.com to read sample pages for We Open Tomorrow Night, or click in the show notes at theaterfolk.com/episode165. Finally, where can you find this podcast? We post new episodes every second Tuesday at theaterfolk.com and on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us on youtube.com/theaterfolk and on the Stitcher app. You can subscribe to TFP on iTunes. All you have to do is search for the word Theater Folk. That's what we are, right? And that's where we're going to end. Take care, my friends. Take care.